Beginning now, I'm Steve Tozer from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I want to say first of all that I started out in early childhood education. Even while I was an undergraduate, I got my start in Head Start in the 60s. I immediately became the director and head teacher of a full-day kindergarten, a 12-month kindergarten for Hull House in Uptown in 1972. I did that for several years, became the director of Christopher House Eastwood Center Early Childhood. So for my first 5 years, I was an early childhood teacher and administrator. And I must tell you, I didn't know much about either. I was really flying by the seat of my pants. And years later, I sort of wondered why I hadn't been shot when I was a daycare director for how little I knew, in that role. I then went back to graduate school because at least I recognized I didn't know much and I really needed to get a lot smarter about education in general. Eventually began to believe that quality of instruction really matters to student learning and that I wanted to, and I got involved in teacher preparation. So I did my doctorate in philosophy of education at University of Illinois at Urbana and was hired there on faculty and for many years was very involved in teacher preparation and became head of the Department of Curriculum Instruction and all that. It was only later that I began to believe that if we're really serious about teacher learning and really serious about quality of classroom instruction, we have to get serious about school leadership. Because most teacher learning takes place after teachers get their certificate. It takes place in schools, and some schools are good learning environments for teachers and some are not. So adult learning became my primary concern, and the notion of school leaders as sort of supporters of adult learning so that students could learn became my focus. Erickson, Bowman, Dewey, and me. I got exposed to John Dewey through Barbara Bowman when I was here at Erickson. And in a way, Barbara chased me out of the early childhood field inadvertently. She was my professor, and we read Dewey together. It was the first time for me. It's a little odd to think that Dewey was born before the Civil War started, and yet he was alive when I was a kid. And that's sort of startling. I mean, this is a relatively compressed history here. And for Barbara and me, when we were reading Dewey, it was very sort of recent history here. And as it turned out, I eventually co-wrote a book with one of Dewey's colleagues while I was a professor at Urbana. So I went from early childhood to philosophy of ed, and that has consequent limitations on my own expertise in early childhood education. In other words, I left the field in the late 70s. And so the consequence is that I want to admit right up front that everybody in the room here knows more about early childhood ed than I do. Even though I was very active in a teaching and leadership role early on, the fact is I've been involved in other dimensions of the education field since then. I think what I have to say today applies to early childhood in some significant ways, and I'd like you to help me think that through. Starting thoughts two, the purposes of today's presentation are pretty straightforward. I want to, first of all, present an argument for improving leadership preparation and development in schools. I want to talk about why that's significant for early childhood, and I want to say a little bit about where we are in Illinois in our efforts to improve leadership preparation and development. And there's a school leader website that just got started that's phenomenal if you wanted to know more about where the whole political and intellectual campaign is in Illinois to change school leadership. Francis, could I ask, is it likely that we could make this available, this PowerPoint, on the Erickson website somewhere? Because I didn't bring handouts, and I think that's an easy way for people to get access if they wanted to do that. Perfect. Okay, I'll do it right away today. Okay, let's start with a problem. For most Illinois school children, demographics are destiny. Where you're born, pretty much, with some exceptions, determines what kind of education you're going to get. This is immoral, it's anti-democratic, and it's in some ways is unconstitutional. And the reality is that we've known about this for a long, long time. And when we break the hold that demographics have on student learning, on student educational destiny, it's usually just an exception to the rule. One of the things I do is research those exceptions. Why is this, however, that for most kids, where you're born really is going to determine the quality of education that you get? Why is that? One is we're not implementing what we already know about creating successful learning environments for children and youth. It's not that we don't know how to do this. It's that we are not doing it. Secondly, I want to just remind you of the Ron Edmonds postulate, 1977, the year I entered Erickson. Edmonds said, Edmonds, by the way, was the founder of the Effective Schools Movement, was a Harvard faculty member at the time. How many schools do you need to see where low-income children are achieving high academic outcomes before you believe that all such children are capable of such achievement? And then he goes on to say, I suggest that if you need to see more than one such example, you have reasons of your own for believing poor children can't learn. If you need to see more than one example of low-income kids achieving highly, then it's on you to try to determine why is it that you don't think that all kids can do this. So that's the Edmonds posture. Let's look at a few others. Problem two, first of all. Increasingly, I want to make sure I didn't skip a slide. Yeah. Increasingly, policymakers, funders, and legislators are looking outside higher ed for the solutions to that first problem. Policymakers and funders, interestingly, believe all kids can learn. What they think is that the education establishment is simply dropping the ball. And I know this intimately because I spend a lot of time with these folks. I spend a lot of time with the people who wrote NCLB. I spent, you know, at the congressional level. I spend time with the Illinois State Legislature. I just came back last night from a meeting in Gwinnett County, Georgia, with the Broad Foundation, with KIPP, with New Leaders for New Schools. This little alphabet soup here, alternative routes to certification, supplied over half the teachers in Texas 2 years ago. Teach for America is growing, and it has tremendous power in Washington, and it has significant power with funders. KIPP, the Knowledge is Power program, which operates in major cities throughout the country. New Leaders for New Schools, which is kind of a Teach for America for principal preparation. KIPP has its own principal preparation network. And then the American College of Ed that some of you know about, which is an online school leadership preparation program. In its first year operating in Illinois, the American College of Education, which is Rod, remember Rod Page, the former U.S. Office of Education, Secretary of Education. Rod Page is one of the people who developed the American College of Ed. In Chicago now, in Illinois, if you want, in one year you can sign up and get a Type 75 administrative certificate online for $4,500, completely online. Now, Illinois approved this. Chicago Public Schools helped finance it. It's moving exactly in the wrong direction because this is not about strong school leader preparation, it's about credentialing, and I'll get into that just a little bit. By the way, in its first year of operation, there are 650 people in the program, and last year, Illinois had fewer than 400 principal vacancies. So, hey, we could shut down every other program in the state and just let that one online program do it. It's producing more principals than we need for the entire state in its first year, and it will grow. So, in a sense, higher ed is not being looked to, you know, as the source of the solution to the problem of student learning. There is a solution to both problems in my view, and I think the research is growing to support this. We ought to be addressing school leader programs not primarily to quantity of graduates but to quality, demonstrating the improvement of student learning in K through 12 schools, and this is what is now becoming known as learning-focused professional preparation. The Southern Regional Education Board has been most instrumental in developing a multi-state initiative to look at how could we hold principal preparation programs accountable to student learning outcomes in schools, and that's how we designed our program 7 years ago. The purpose of our principal preparation program that I'll get into in a few minutes is exactly to improve student learning in schools, and if we do not see student learning improvements in schools, then something's wrong with our program, right? Either we're selecting the wrong people or we're giving them the wrong experiences. Now, you might say, okay, what do you mean by student learning? And I do want to get into that because I'm not just talking test scores here. I'm talking about a change in school culture. Now the question is, can a school principal actually do that? And the answer is absolutely yes. The research is clear on that at this point. There's no doubt about that. And if you haven't seen examples, then we need to talk about examples so that you can go see it happening, because the reality is there's no reason that those kids aren't learning other than the organization and instruction of that school.